You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Freak Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
Superheroes, they are the staple of comic books. When you think of comic books, you think about the heroes, but you can't have a great hero without a great villain. And today we're going to be looking at our favorite villains. This is a Kirby Club produced episode from one of our amazing patrons, Eric. He is not able to join us today, but he did task us with breaking down our favorite villains. And when I say R, I am referring to the R in Rimzo Martinez, my co-host. Rimzo, what's up?
You can't spell villainy without villain, and the villains that you and I have gone ahead and put together today should go ahead and make anyone's recommended villain reading list extra sinister this Thanksgiving.
Indeed, indeed. And this was actually really hard for me because I don't know about you. I'm kind of a villain guy. Like I kind of like villains.
My soul is black. This took me 2 seconds.
Well, no, I mean, what was hard for me was just deciding which ones to keep on my very short list as opposed to, and I'm glad we decided, like, Eric first wanted us to just give our favorite, and we do end up having a favorite here because we each have a list. But to me, I was glad we decided to at least expand it a little bit and do three each, because, like, I mean, I have like 50 I'm trying to sort out. Like, I love villains, and I probably have more favorite villains than I do favorite heroes when it comes down to it.
So can I guess that Killer Shrike is one of them?
Man, I almost forgot about good old
Talk
Killer
about
Shrike.
Throwback. I've been thinking about it
all
day.
He's number 49.
Yeah, he's like my 50. He's right there. Like, nice, he's nice. Low enough to be considered dumb, but at least he's in the countdown, so he's still sinister. Kinda.
I like it. I think he deserves to be there. He deserves a mention, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Yes, but this episode is being brought to you, like I mentioned, by the Kirby Club. And we actually have two Kirby Club members now. Jeff Reed will be hearing his episode next month. But this month is, I think it's actually Eric's third Kirby Club produced episode. The first two we looked at Days of Future Past and the Dark Phoenix. No, not Days of Future Past. We looked at the Phoenix Saga and the... Yes, the Leprechauns, the Leprechaun Phoenix Saga, and the sadly non-Leprechaun Dark Phoenix Saga. And now Eric has steered us in a slightly different direction than the Silver Age X-Men, and he has just wanted us to break down our favorite villains. And I'm really excited about it. Of course, you too can produce an episode of your own for a measly 50 smackers a month by joining the Kirby Club over at Patreon, patreon.com/secondprintpod. Of course, you don't need 50 bucks to join the Patreon. You can do it for as little as $5 a month. And for that, you get access to all of our exclusive bonus audio content, like Rimzo Rants, like What Mark Missed, like the now defunct Random Marvel Comics podcast, because Marvel Unlimited took away their random button, which is very sad. But we do our best to get you guys consistent bonus content for your buck. So please do check that out. But that being said, today, I think it's time to dive right in, Rimzo. Would you like to begin? Now, I know you had a list of three, but I also confess to you that I couldn't even quite manage three. So I also have an honorable mention as well. Do you have one?
Yes, I do. I thought we'd go ahead and start this bloody and mercilessly. When it comes to a villain, I only look for a few things to qualify them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You always have criteria where I'm just kind of freewheeling here, but let's hear it.
My criteria is this. Often we go ahead and we look at these villains and we try and make excuses for them. We try and find this quote-unquote humanity in them. I want the bastards that straight up know they're evil, choose to be evil, and love being evil, and have also committed some of the most heinous acts. So the fact that this guy is my honorary mention should let you know the caliber a super sinister comic book villain that I'm going with. My honorary mention to kick things off is Negan from The Walking Dead.
Interesting. A non-superpowered villain, but a villain nonetheless. Although you could even argue, as you go along the story in the comic book Walking Dead, at some point, Negan actually does become one of those villains you can almost sort of start to make excuses for if you get deep enough on the
thing. Almost. It takes a while, but I mean, ultimately, all it does is it really doubles down on the fact that this is a person who has chosen to be evil. And I'll never forget the first time I ever laid my eyes on Negan. I was watching season 3 of The Walking Dead, already getting attached to too many characters who were going to become zombified or detached at some point, physically or emotionally.
They brought him in that early in season 3?
Well, no, he came in a bit later, but this is when he got introduced in the comics. It was around season 3 of The Walking Dead.
Gotcha.
So yeah. Around this time, I was trying to decide like how much of the comics influenced the TV show and vice versa. And this is when, and this is full of spoilers, as always. So please, you know, muffins on your ears, hide your kids, hide your husband, hide your wife if you've been living under a rock for the last decade. But Negan, when he went ahead and got Rick's crew and basically, you know, eeny miny mowed them into pissing themselves, when he murdered Glenn, and Glenn was my favorite at that point, second probably only to Daryl, when he beat Glenn in front of Maggie and Carl and the rest of his friends, and you see his eye come out, and Negan's like, ah, gross, gotta fix that, and he's just beating the shit out of him with Lucille, that's when I knew we're dealing with a bad motherfucker. But I'm like, you know, that's just the comics. Like, they obviously wouldn't do that in the show. And then several seasons later, around 2016, what do? They bring in Negan, and not only does he kill, that dude, but he kills several other members of Rick's crew. It's just it was just horrifying in the comics, and it was even more so when you actually hear the bat swing and the cracking of the skull and the blood spattering everywhere, and Glenn just like, and then he's just dead. Like, it just drove it home in a way that just verified that Negan is one of the most sick sons of bitches ever created.
I mean, it's a nasty scene in the comic, and it's like mostly off panel, but it's just the way they do the sounds, and like, you know what's happening. It's just it's one of the more effective villain making scenes in any medium. In the comic, I didn't see the TV version, never got that far, but I am, from the sounds of it, it was had similar impact.
You got just YouTube Negan kills Glenn. What's really
and he kills I don't want to spoil it, but fuck it, the show's been out for a while. He kills Carl in that scene in the show too, right?
It was the redheaded guy. He didn't kill Carl.
Oh, okay.
He killed a handlebar mustache guy who was also pretty cool.
Ah, okay.
I'm really going to screw this up for some people, but often people have been wondering what Glenn's last words were when he got up and his eyes out and he's like, you know, his brain is exposed and he's like, Robert Kirkman confirmed that his last words were, Maggie, I love you. And then Negan continued to bash his skull in with Lucille.
Oof. Have you ever read Here's Negan?
I have the first issue.
I think there's only one. It's a one shot. So yes, yeah. You have the first and only issue.
Yeah. I was wondering why they didn't come out. I'm waiting for number two. Like, did I miss something?
Every week you're like, is it here yet?
Yeah. I read that, and it was like, I get what they were trying to do. I don't think, I don't think Image Comics was going to keep doing it, because all the profit from that went straight to comic book stores. It was a relief special that they did. So I think Robert Kirkman has said that that he might continue doing Here's Negan, but it'll have to be, you know, at some point later on. And I think the conversations have kind of, at least in terms of like, you know, comic book reporting, have just kind of gone silent for a while. But it was good. I mean, I don't like it when they do it to every villain. So I'm not going to say, oh yeah, I loved the approach they're doing with making Negan more of a sympathetic, you know, anti-hero type of guy like they tried to do. I want my Negan murdering people and laughing and, you know, just being just an evil son of a bitch.
Yeah. I mean, his portrayal in the Walking Dead comic is one of the more dastardly, at least until kind of towards the end of his run. He kind of gets a little more sympathetic because he ends up sort of helping them out with the Whisperer guys or whatever. But I mean, even then you're kind of just expecting him to go bad any minute. And then his story kind of gets, you know, he goes off into the sunset. So we never really know what happens to him. But for the time that he was in full villain mode, I mean, it's hard to find someone that had more of a pure nasty streak in comics than Negan, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, to have Jeffrey Dean Morgan go from the comedian in The Watchmen to then being cast as Negan. I mean, that was just perfect casting, too. I mean, it really drove it home.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, we will move on to my honorable mention now. And this was really hard because even with my honorable mention, I was like, you know, I had to spend a lot of time thinking about it. But I wanted to at least have a representative from what really was one, like, probably my favorite hero. He wasn't my original favorite hero. My original favorite hero was really like individual hero was Spider-Man, but that quickly morphed into Batman once I discovered Batman. And just the fact that he didn't have powers, I just always thought was the coolest thing. And then of course, most of his villains also don't have powers, including my honorable mention, which is not who you might think it would be. It is not the Joker. It is Two-Face. Good old Harvey Dent. And I broke down a little bit of info for my guys here, but so Two-Face debuted in Detective Comics number 66 in 1942, I believe, created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger. Quick little origin story. His dad abused him and flipped a coin to decide his fate. Now, I don't remember if this was in The Long Halloween. It was somewhere, but there is a story where they do like a flashback where he realizes that his dad's coin had two heads on it. So this whole time his dad's flipping heads and tails, always landing heads and always resulting in his abuse. Whereas it was just always the two heads. So he's always going to get beat up every time. And I just think that is such an important little nugget that, parlays into what this character has become. And I think another thing I really like about Harvey Dent and to me, like, to me, as we discussed, Batman Year One is the canon origin of Batman, no matter what. Therefore, Harvey Dent is, in my headcanon anyway, always been sort of, before he became Two-Face, he was kind of like the Batman of DAs. Like, he's willing to work with Batman, willing to go a little...
Do you almost see Harvey Dent and Two-Face as like two separate characters?
I mean, yeah, and they kind of are. I mean, I don't know if you ever read All-Star Batman.
Was that the Frank Miller one?
No. It was one that came out not long after.
Was this DC Rebirth?
It was. Yeah, it was around the DC Rebirth time. And it was.
Yeah, it had Romita Jr. drawing it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And that one, they go into this whole thing where Batman is actually put on this path by Harvey Dent to like get this potion, this formula that was gonna like fix his disorder. But then I think at the end, something like Batman realized like it was actually gonna fix his disorder by killing the Harvey Dent part and leaving just Two-Face. So then Batman gave him this other thing that basically kept him in the state that he is, in the sort of multiple personality state that he is. But yeah, but like the Two-Face personality is, I mean, it's literally like the opposite of the Harvey Dent personality. So I just like that he was really almost like the Batman of law enforcement. It's similar in how Jim Gordon is like the Batman of the police. Harvey Dent was the Batman of the DA's office, essentially. And in Year One, they all end up kind of working together. So the fact that he ends up becoming one of Batman's greatest villains, and it makes so much sense with once you realize the abuse, it's kind of reminds me a little bit, although they're very different characters, of course, but I think there's similar reasons that I like them. It reminds me a little bit of the Hulk character, where this Hulk, you know, yeah, the radiation is what.
Oh, man, that does make some sense. And we did cover that, yeah. You know, the Hulk, you know, Bruce Banner's childhood way back in like episode 5, 6.
Yeah. Yep, indeed. Yeah, so like, I mean, the Hulk personalities were they already existed inside Bruce Banner because of all the abuse that he had received as a child. So he kind of, these personalities formed inside him. You ever seen the movie Sybil? Did you ever watch that in school?
No. What was that?
It's crazy. I couldn't even believe they showed it to us in school. It's about this girl. It's played. She's played by, who the fuck plays her? Some old actress that I can't remember. Anyway, yeah, basically, it's based on a real story about this girl who was abused. Like, and she had like 27 different personalities that were documented by like psychologists. It's a really famous case because like all the different forms of abuse created these different personalities, and she would escape into these different personalities to sort of escape the abuse. So like one personality would be abused, and then it didn't want to remember the abuse anymore, so it would go to another personality.
It's just like Crazy Jane.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's Harvey Dent with just one extra personality. So it's not quite as extreme as Sybil. But yeah, similar to the Hulk in the fact that like this Two-Face personality, it existed in Harvey Dent due to his childhood abuse, and only came out with the acid attack in the courtroom when he then sort of became a crime lord as well. And I like that, like, like, even though he has the two different personalities, he has the Harvey Dent personality and the Two-Face personality. The Two-Face personality has the intellect and the knowledge of the Harvey Dent personality. So he can think like a DA, he can think like law enforcement, and they always use that as a way that Two-Face is sort of able to outsmart regular law enforcement. Of course, Batman will always end up fixing it in the end, but I really like that aspect of his character too, that he's not just a random crime boss. He's actually like the ultimate crime boss, because he's literally is doing the exact opposite of what he was doing in his pre-Two-Face persona. I guess I don't know if it says something about me. I like characters with I don't know, this sounds bad. I like characters that were abused and have multiple personalities as a result of that abuse.
You should see somebody about that.
I should probably work some things out myself as well. I don't think I was abused. I think I had great parents, but who knows? Maybe there's some personalities residing in here just waiting for the right moment
to
come out.
We'll see. Stay away from acid baths.
Indeed. But that's as far as I'm going to go there on my honorable mention, because it is just a mention. But that is my number four, is Two-Face.
Well, now we're actually into the top three, and I can probably say that my guys, I'm having to pull them up right now because I really want to pay attention to this order. Originally, I was going to say there is no order. I just picked the three, and they could wane in, you know, my favoritism, you know, depending on my mood and stuff like that. But I think I really did get them down to an order. So my number three is a definitive number three, and I hope it really kind of leads down to who my number one will be. My number three is Lex Luthor. Now, a lot of people, they think of him as, you know, like the golden age, you know, mad scientist, bald, evil, hates Superman scientist. And then we get into the post-crisis era where he is really established as the evil head of LexCorp. What has always struck me is the fact that Lex is one of those villains who always really he does tell you what his intentions are. He really does come clean with why he is the way he is and why he does what he does. While he definitely has more of this public persona where he just really tries to make himself into a hero of the people, even so much so becoming president of the United States, as we covered in our Public Enemies episode. Lex also has the ability for great heroism, and that's what's really thrown people off. For like 4 or 5 years, Lex Luthor actually just gave up trying to fight Superman. He was like, you know what? I could do so much good. I'm going to actually be a hero and join the Justice League. And, you know, for a while, you actually saw like this really great self-exploration amongst Lex Luthor, where you saw deep remorse for what he did. You actually saw that Lex is doing this not because he has a secret plan or he wants to one up Superman, but because he actually realizes that a lot of his villainy early on was a waste of time. That's what makes his recent descent back into being a villain in the DC universe almost more tragic, because he did so willingly. He did so with full intent. One of my favorite Lex Luthor stories is in the original All-Star Superman from the mid-2000s, where after he creates basically this formula to give him Superman's powers, basically he messed up on something. So what it does is it keeps expanding his power set almost to the point where he becomes almost godlike, and he can see all the truth and all the answers to life and existence himself. And at one point it almost cripples him. And at one point he starts, after a fight with Superman, he starts yelling at him. He's like, all these things, all these amazing things I could have done without you. You were the reason why I did this. I hate you. And Superman comes down and he looks at him and he's like, that's the sad thing about this, Lex. You could have always done that. You could have been the hero. You could have been better than me, but you chose not to. And Lex Luthor looks up at Superman and he says, you're right. And he gives up. And it was in that moment, it's like, you know, Lex had all these excuses. Lex let his ego really run him. But Lex did all of this by choice. And it's really sad, because I think we could look at many people throughout history. Many people were like, oh, that lost potential. Oh, what if they had used their villainy for good in many cases? What could the world have been like? And with Lex Luthor, we do kind of see that. So I think a lot of people think that he's sometimes somewhat of a two-dimensional villain. But I mean, when Lex is done right, and you know, whether he's canceled or not because he's a freak of nature. I will credit Kevin Spacey with probably being the best on-screen Lex Luthor. His portrayal of Lex Luthor in Superman Returns is probably the best version I've seen. Obviously, Kevin Spacey's never coming back for obvious reasons, but I don't think Lex gets enough credit. So Lex is my number three.
The only thing I'm going to challenge you on here, and honestly, I've never seen that Superman Returns movie, so I can't judge Kevin Spacey's performance. I imagine it's amazing because he is an amazing actor, despite his perhaps illicit...
Before he was sexually assaulting minors.
Yeah, and threatening people and probably having them killed and all that stuff. Before all that.
Did Kevin Spacey threaten to kill somebody?
You didn't see that? Oh, no, he has... look, this is kind of a tangent. Oh, he was
so perfect for Lex Luthor then.
He did this video where after House of Cards was, he got booted from House of Cards.
Was it the Thanksgiving video? You didn't think I would be gone.
Right. He did this video in character and then he didn't directly threat, but he did say something like, you'll regret challenging me or something like that. And then within a couple months,
you'll rue the day you tried to come after me.
And two of his accusers died in the next couple months. One had a car accident and one was a mysterious death. So
man, that's some Hillary Clinton
might be
shit.
He might be more of a portrayal of a villain than you could even imagine.
I'm
not making any accusations, Mr. Spacey. I don't actually have any knowledge of this. It's pure speculation. I just read it on an entertainment website. I don't know anything.
About comic books.
We are just comic book guys. We don't know anything. We have no other interests or lives. But I will say, to me, Lex Luthor is and always shall be Gene motherfucking Heck. You know, I don't have the Spacey. Now I might have to go watch. How do you like those movies, by the way?
Here's the thing about.
Or is it just one movie? Was there one or two?
It was just Superman Returns. Here's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. Superman Returns is the final chapter of the Richard Donner Superman series.
Is it supposed to be?
It is supposed to be.
And it's supposed to be that same Superman and that same Lex Luthor, just with different actors?
Yes.
Oh, so I didn't know that.
If you watch it understanding that this is a continuation of the Richard Donner Superman series of, Christopher Reeves and Gene Hackman and everyone else, if you see them as that continuing story, you will love it. If you don't understand that, you will be confused.
You know, this movie came out during my dark period, and not only was I not really reading comics then, I wasn't watching movies, but I just wasn't into comic book type stuff. I don't know what happened. Same thing with wrestling. I just went through this 10-year period where I just rejected all the stuff that I was into as a kid. I don't know if I just thought I should because I was getting older or whatever, or I don't know what it was, but for whatever reason, this did come out in that time period. So I never saw it. So this is like a sequel to, this is a direct sequel then to Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, or are we pretending that Superman, yeah, 4 didn't happen.
Okay, so if you want to be real nitpicky, just pretend 4 never happened and just go straight from 3 where he fights Zod. Was it 2 or 3 where he fights Zod?
It's 2 where he fights. This one actually says that that it's ignoring the events of Superman. I'm looking at the Wikipedia now. It ignores the events of Superman 3, Supergirl, which I did not know was a movie. Apparently that came out in 1984, and Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. So this is basically Superman 3, essentially, because if you're ignoring those other movies.
Yeah, that's the best thing to do. So go back and maybe watch a little Richard Donner Superman, maybe catch the one with the OG Zod and everyone. And I think you will appreciate Superman Returns. I can probably say that while a lot of the early 2000s, late 90s superhero films were made for a mass audience, there's a reason why a lot of people didn't like Superman Returns. It's because it was made for the people that like the Donner movies, and it was really made for the comic book diehards. Otherwise, if you do not love Superman, I think I understand why a lot of people did not like Superman Returns.
Fair enough. Well, I'll add it to my list because I am curious about it, and especially now I'm a little curious about Kevin Spacey's performance. But to me, it's going to take a lot to top Gene Hackman. That's all I'm going to say. But it is not going to take a lot to top Jesse Eisenberg, who I generally like, but terrible, terrible casting for Lex Luthor. Just, I think the worst part of Zack Snyder's movie is honestly casting wise.
I feel like the Eisenberg was the same as Ezra Miller. I feel like those were studio compromises. Mm-hmm. Because originally Snyder wanted Bryan Cranston to be Lex Luthor.
Oh, yes. That would be amazing.
Yeah, but they were like, no, this Eisenberg kid. Come on, Zach. Come on, Zach. Yeah. Anywho.
What are you going to do? But we got Henry Cavill, so that's all right. Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to move into my number three now. And I don't have the same necessarily requirements as you do in terms of my villains having to be extra nasty, extra truly villainy. Although, yeah, well, I'll just get into it because this one kind of goes back and forth. But to me, it is a lot of it is nostalgia. At least my number three is very much a nostalgia pick. But I think he also really holds up as a top villain. Probably if you look at any list, he's going to be somewhere up there in the top five, I would imagine, on most people's comic book lists. But my number three is the one and only Victor Von Doom, nemesis of the Fantastic Four and Reed Richards, debuted in Fantastic Four, number five, April 1962, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Quick origin story, by the way, his mother, I think this is like an updated version of the origin, because I don't know. I don't think they got into this in the when they first introduced the character. But the current origin of Victor Von Doom is that his mother was killed in a bargain with Mephisto gone wrong. Now, we all know bargains with Mephisto pretty much always go wrong.
But
Victor Von Doom learned that at a very young age. It's also what interested him in the dark arts. And so what I like about Victor Von Doom is that he is many things at once. He is an iron-fisted ruler of Latveria. He is a genius, which I always like, similar to Reed Richards. He is a time traveler. He has created time machines. He is a relative, an ancestor, I guess you would say, of Kang the Conqueror. He also has like somewhat of a sympathetic backstory in some ways, because for so long he was obsessed with sort of like rematerializing his mother. I think his scars actually came from an experiment he was doing in like when he was in college with Reed Richards, where he was trying to like basically bring her back from the ethereal plane or whatever you want to call it. And Reed was like, I think you got some settings wrong. He's like, fuck you, asshole. And then the thing exploded and burned his face. He's a villain. He does villainous things, but he's a villain who has pride, who has honor, who cares about his nation. He might have used violence to overthrow the leadership of that nation and become an iron-fisted king. But nonetheless, he does care about his nation. He cares about his mother, and in general just wants to rule the world, though. Although he definitely, well, I don't know if he's not really a rule the world guy as much as rule his own world guy. Sometimes, which
he tried to become God, Mark. Not once, not twice. He tried to do so four times.
Sometimes you got to try to become a god to make an omelet, something like that. I think that's the old phrase.
As they say in Latveria, you fix domestic politics with godhood.
Doom was pretty much one of the first villains I was exposed to. My very first book I ever laid hands on was the Fantastic Four. So I quickly came to know Victor Von Doom as their arch nemesis. But, you know, Victor Von Doom is one of those villains that sometimes ends up teaming up with the heroes, whether it's maybe for some brief moments in like an Infinity War, Infinity Crusade type thing, or Secret Wars, although he was in the latest rendition, he is kind of like the main villain of Secret Wars. But I like that he can serve different roles. Like, I mean, he even became Iron Man at one point, the infamous Iron Man. He's had a lot of different roles, and I think it's just the character. I think I enjoy the character of Victor Von Doom more so than I necessarily do of Dr. Doom, because Victor Von Doom is kind of, you know, Dr. Doom is almost an aspect of the Victor Von Doom character, which we see in many different forms. And even to this day, sometimes he's teaming up with Reed Richards. I think in a recent storyline it's Dan Slott that's writing it now. Or is it Chip Zdarsky? One of those guys. He invited the Fantastic Four to his wedding. Now, of course, he did it with some villainous intent, but there's always this sort of, you know, they're friends, but they're enemies, but they're friends, but they're enemies, but they're best friends, but they're really enemies kind of thing going on. Which
he's like Dwight Schrute. That's what I've always compared him to. Yes. If Jim Halpert is Mr. Fantastic, then Dr. Doom is Dwight Schrute.
That is a pretty damn good comparison, actually. And maybe he's a slightly more evil, slightly more competent Dwight Schrute, but that's not bad. You know, they're like best frenemies, you know, like they almost need to have each other to battle and play off of. And that's what I really appreciate about the Doom character, and the fact that he just ties in so much to Marvel lore. He ties into the Rama Tut stuff, a big Fantastic Four story where they go back in time. He also ties into future stuff with Kang, which ends up tying into the past, and yada, yada, yada. And he's definitely just a huge part of Marvel history. You can't really tell the story of the history of the Marvel Universe without talking about Victor Von Doom. So that is why he is my number three.
How do you feel about what Stan Lee once said, where he was like, I don't see Victor Von Doom as a villain, but as a sympathetic antagonist.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. I mean, it just depends on the writer and the story, but I think that's, I mean, as the guy that created him, I think he'd be the foremost expert. And yeah, I mean, he's someone you can feel sympathy for how he got to where he is. He wasn't just born evil. He's not just trying to randomly conquer the world, although he might try to become a god to achieve certain ends now and then. These things happen. It's the Marvel Universe. You got to do what you got
to
do.
He just really wants to bang his best frenemy's wife.
That's what it comes down to. That's what's always come down. Pretty much the entire like first 50 issues of Fantastic Four, every conflict is someone wanting to bang Sue. Ben Grimm wants to bang Sue. Victor Von Doom wants to bang Sue. Namor wants to bang Sue and probably succeeded.
Oh, Namor totally did. He totally did.
Oh yeah, we know that. So yeah, that is my number three. What about, I think we're back to your number two now.
My number two. So Mark, I think I've brought him up once or twice. I actually did a Remso rant episode way under back on Patreon. So folks, if you want to listen to me give a full history of this guy and why I love him, you can go back into the Patreon archives and check out that Remso rant. I am talking about the Hood. Parker Robbins is one of those obscure Marvel Knights limited series characters that was brought up during the early 2000s, but was quickly kind of forgotten, given a retcon. And ultimately, Parker Robbins was just a mugger. He was a bank robber. He was just a low-life criminal from New York. And he always wanted to aspire to do more. He didn't even really want to be a bad guy. He was just a high school dropout who fell in with the wrong people and ultimately just led a life of lots of regret. So what he realized was, if he's not going to get any type of second chance, he might as well be the biggest badass in crime in the Marvel Universe. So what he did was he found this enchanted hood, which was actually his way of transforming into a giant demon monster and getting a bunch of other crazy powers. And what he did immediately was he tried to take out all the other crime bosses in New York in order to eventually go up against the Kingpin. Not only does he succeed in that, and not only does he become one of the new Avengers' most like dangerous villains, but he became an existential crisis to the Marvel Universe. He worked with Loki and got access to Norn Stones, which made him, dangerous enough to like freak Thor out. He became so powerful with his demonic powers that he even was in the running to become the next Sorcerer Supreme after Doctor Strange lost that title in the Brian Michael Bendis New Avengers for a bit. And even after he was arrested by he also managed to become quickly part of Norman Osborn's cabal during the Dark Reign era. So he instantly became like an A-list villain overnight. But eventually he loses to the New Avengers, gets arrested. In prison, he basically works with a bunch of other prisoners to have them go out and get all their lackeys to go and steal the Infinity Stones. And Parker Robbins even becomes capable of planning this giant heist to get the Infinity Gauntlet from the Illuminati. And eventually, like, every Marvel hero basically has to team up. And I think they even bring in Thanos at one point. They're like, Thanos, we even need you to help grab this guy.
We know you tried to do the whole Gauntlet King and killed half of everybody, but we need you here.
Yeah, they're like, Thanos, this is so bad, we need you. So eventually...
Although they even do that in Infinity War. Like, in the same series, they have to bring in Thanos to help them out.
But yeah, yeah, because Nebula goes crazy. But basically, within probably 5-6 years, Parker Robbins, the Hood, goes from robbing liquor stores to threatening the entire universe. And he's been kind of quiet since. They brought him out here and there. He hasn't quite been the same, but the Hood was just such a scrappy, you gotta commend a guy who goes from nothing to threatens existence. There's something like about that where you're like, I've seen the hustle. And yeah, he's a murderous psychopath, but he's a cool murderous psychopath who almost destroyed the universe. So to go from liquor store to Infinity Gauntlet, Parker Robbins, the Hood, is definitely my number two.
Well, this is one character that I cannot comment on because as I've looked up here while we're talking, he didn't debut till 2002, right around the time you know what happened when the Dark Period began. So I know nothing. In fact, maybe this is a good candidate for an upcoming What Mark Missed, the Patreon show where I go back and read stories I missed. Maybe you can toss me the best Hood story or a Hood origin story, whatever you think I should read, and I'll review that one for patrons. I'll toss that out there right now.
You'll love him.
Because I got nothing else to say about it other than I respect your opinions, Remzo. But I have a feeling that my number two is going to be a very similar situation for you, where you will probably have no idea at all about this villain. Because my number two is from the pages of Eric Larson's Savage Dragon, Dark Lord, / Damian Dark Lord, depending on which version of the character we're discussing here. Now, can I just confirm you have no idea anything about Dark Lord? Is that right?
Yeah. Treat me like I'm stupid.
Okay. This is a challenge I have been somewhat looking forward to for some time, is to explain the origin of Damian Dark Lord. I'm going to try to do it right now without even looking at notes. Okay. So in the Savage Dragons universe, in the Savage Dragon universe, at one point there was an invasion, a Mars Attacks invasion. And now this is like an image wide event, actually. And it actually did tie into a lot of other image type things. Like, I think like, the aliens like killed Youngblood because it was right when, Rob Liefeld was on the outs with Image. So they just like killed. Yeah. They just like got rid of Youngblood with that event. And then that ends up leading to the Savage Dragon, forming the Special Operations Strike Force, which is the government team that replaces Youngblood. But anyway, during that invasion, the daughter of Super Patriot, her name is Liberty. She was taken captive by Martians and raped repeatedly by Martians. She then had a baby. This baby was born with like the exposed, like Martian brain, like all the Martians have. It's basically the same exact Martians from the movie Mars Attacks, are tied directly into the origin of this villain. So that's where he was originally born, as this like the daughter, the son of Liberty and a bunch of Martians that raped her. So
Mark, I don't know how Martian biology works, but I'm pretty sure in a gangbang, even if they get pregnant, it's still only by one Martian.
I don't know either. I mean, I don't know how Martian sperm works or anything. I don't know. Freddy Krueger was the son of 100 maniacs, they say, because his mom was in the mental institution and got raped by like 100 psychos.
You know, I mean, yes, biologically speaking, a lot of things. So let's just go with this.
Biologically speaking, you are probably right. It is probably Freddy Krueger is probably just the son of one maniac, and Damian Dark Lord is probably just the son of one Martian rapist. But nonetheless, so this baby gets taken away, as do several other babies, by this organization known as the Covenant of the Sword. They also capture Savage Dragon's baby Malcolm, who later becomes like the star of the series, like literally 20 years later. Because this is what I love about Savage Dragon is like continuity is like it's amazing, the continuity, like literally he'll do things in early issues that pay off 20 fucking years later. And we're gonna look at a Savage Dragon story. I think we're gonna push it back to January I may as well take this moment while I'm ranting, while I'm side ranting about this character's origin, before I forget. The reason I bumped this show from next month is because we decided to do something very special this next month. So I'm just going to bust in to the middle of the show right now with a breaking news announcement. We have teased it. We have discussed it. We have mentioned it. We have feared it. But next month we will be tackling Crisis on Infinite Earths. It is Crisis Month in December this year. And Remzo and I, this story, you know, we used to do crazy things. Like, I think I recapped 27 issues of Savage Dragon in like the third episode of the show. That's too much.
Monster.
Just to get through that one. I don't know how I ever did that. I don't know how I did 12 issues of Warren Ellis' Stormwatch. But I think what we've realized over the first year or so is that we are at our best at around the 4-issue range, 4 to 6, but even the 6 is kind of stretching it. I think we're definitely at our best when we're doing no more than like 4 issues, because we can kind of go into the detail we need to with everything, really go into our side rants and all that stuff.
You need to learn to read.
But yeah, so we don't have to do reading for you. But we have decided to, since Crisis on Infinite Earths is a very dense story, it's 12 issues, but it's 12 like packed issues. I mean, so much happens. There are so many characters, literally like hundreds of characters. We're going to need Jonathan Hickman to toss up some flowcharts for this thing to keep track of this thing. But
we're going to have to resurrect the ghost of George Perez.
Yeah. He's not alive.
Is he alive?
I have no idea. I honestly hadn't thought about it recently. I think he is. I think someone even told me. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is. Let's see. Live research, everybody. Live with us in the moment. George Perez was born June 9th, 1954. He is still
alive. Oh, my God. Day. He's still alive.
In fact, he looks great. There's a picture of him here in 2012. He looks fantastic. He kind of looks like Lex Luthor.
George, I didn't mean anything. I love you.
Not only is he alive, he seems like he's got a while to go. Like, he's actually pretty young, considering you feel like he's been around forever. Like, literally forever.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I think he's got some more. I don't think he's doing any books currently, as far as I know. But he should. He definitely should be.
Wow.
Anyway, side rant within a side rant within a side rant, but the first three episodes of December will be dedicated to covering Crisis on Infinite Earths. So tune in for that, my friends. We also have a very amazing graphic that we'll be sharing around from our friend Dan Smotz, who does just fantastic work. If you ever need graphic stuff done, you're going to ask us how to contact him, and we'll hook you up for a small fee. Yeah. But anyway, back to Damian Darklord. Speaking of confusing like Crisis on Infinite Earths, yes, Martian rape baby. This is only the beginning, though. So it turns out that as these things happen, Dark Lord is actually like a time traveler because he has these crazy abilities. Because he not only has like the superpower and super strength that Liberty has passed down to her from her superpoweredness, but he also has all this like Martian blood in him. And the result is just like this incredibly powerful character who has like amazing like psychic abilities. He can do crazy stuff with his mind. He's also a genius, so he can invent things like portals and time traveling devices. He can pretty much do it fucking all. So what happened is Damian Dark Lord grows up, and then Dark Lord, not Damian anymore because he's grown up, goes back in time to the 80s, and he becomes a villain in the 80s and battles these heroes, Super Tough and Young Tough. Super Tough gets killed in a Negabomb explosion, which is caused by Dark Lord, and Young Tough gets horribly scarred and eventually becomes the anti-hero Mace, who you may remember from that first Savage Dragon story we looked at. So they battle him in the 80s, and they kind of like get rid of that version of Dark Lord. I don't remember if he dies. Or they might just send him off to another world. I think they send him off to another world, an alternate universe. That's what it is. That alternate universe becomes Dark World. It's basically just this other Earth that's like off in another place, and like everything about it is bad. Like there's an evil savage dragon on that world. There's an evil whatever. But that world is like dying. So basically what Dark Lord wants to do is replace Earth, the Savage Dragon's Earth, with his Dark World. So he slowly starts like teleporting parts of Dark World onto Earth. Now, this is after Damian Dark Lord, the baby, has been born, but nobody knows this is the same. No one knows this is related yet. So basically, like, Dark Lord lives his whole life, goes in the future, comes back to prepare for his own ascension. So he creates the Covenant of the Snored and has himself kidnapped to prepare himself to become this villain later on. And so are you confused yet? Eventually the Special Operations Strike Force, which is Savage Dragon and a bunch of other heroes that used to be part of Freak Force, they go to Dark World to battle Dark Lord, adult Dark Lord. They are victorious in that battle and they kill adult Dark Lord. He like gets trapped between this portal and it gets like cut in half. So he's dead. So they save the day. However, the day is not totally saved because later Savage Dragon does figure out that Damian Dark Lord. Oh, and also Dark Lord kills Savage Dragon's the mother of his child, Rapture, in their first encounter. So Savage Dragon, after later learning what Dark Lord was all about, realizes that this little baby alien guy grows up to be Dark Lord and grows up to kill the mother of his child. So what does Savage Dragon eventually do? And I'm giving away a lot of Savage Dragon plot here, but it is what it is. He goes and tries to kill this baby Dark Lord. When he does that, something crazy happens. And there's a huge explosion and Savage Dragon wakes up on another world. What turns out that happened, what really happened there, there's multiple realities. All right. There's multiple realities in the Savage Dragon universe. In one reality. So another thing about Dark Lord,
this shit's getting wild.
Dark Lord talks to multiple other versions of himself. So he's in constant communication with other versions of Dark Lord from all other different alternate realities. So they're all talking to each other. They're all plotting together. even though they're all kind of the same guy, they're all different guys, but they're all different versions of the same guy with the same goal to have Dark World be like the one world that they rule over, essentially. So Savage Dragon tries to kill Damien Darklord, but what really happens is on another universe, in another parallel reality, at the same exact time, baby Damien Darklord transports Savage Dragon's mind to this other Savage Dragon body in the regular Savage Dragon universe, and then Savage Dragon's mind is replaced with the goes into the body on the other universe. That's known as the Savage World. And from that point on, pretty much all of Savage Dragon, even including till today, takes place on that Savage World, which is another thing I like about Eric Larson. He doesn't just do gimmicks, like gimmicks matter. So like when that first happened, everybody's like, oh, this is just going to be like 6 issues, 12 issues. And then it becomes like the permanent place that Dragon stays. So now his new history, he is this other version of Dragon that was transported to this other world, essentially. Confused yet? I'm not done. So, anyway, that is like the basic origin of Damien Darklord and how Savage Dragon ends up in a different body on a different universe. At the same time, the version of Dragon from that universe, he gets transported to Dragon's dead body in the original universe. So he's dead. So basically the original Savage Dragon is in an alternate version's body for the rest of his series.
Okay. Pause. So this is like Rick and Morty, where they fuck up their world, so they go to the other world where they died, and they replace the dead Rick and Morty, and every season has taken place in that new world.
Pretty much. Yeah, okay. That's pretty accurate, actually. That's actually a good way to understand it for Rick and Morty fans. It's not that his world was fucked up. It wasn't at first. He just ended up in this other world and didn't know how to get back. Eventually, they find a way for him to get back to the original world. This is like the plot of Savage Dragon 100. It's like a huge story. He ends up back in the original world, but he has to go do, I forget exactly what happened. He has to go back to the Savage World to do some shit. He gets like called back there. And while he's there, he defends this. I'm pretty much going into the whole history of Savage Dragon here, but it does tie in. He successfully defends that Savage World against this creature called Universo. Now, Universo is basically, he's Galactus plus a Celestial. He looks like a Celestial, but he's basically Galactus. He goes around eating worlds. So he defeats Universo by using this Martian shrinking ray that comes from that Mars Attack storyline that they kept the Martian shrinking ray. But meanwhile, because they're parallel Earths, the universo of the other Earth that Savage Dragon originally comes from goes there and destroys that Earth because there's no Savage Dragon to protect that Earth. That Earth contains original baby Damien Darklord, who we assume it did die on that Earth, that version of him, as well as Malcolm Dragon, his son. However, Malcolm and another version of Angel, Savage Dragon's stepdaughter, escape into a thing and... whatever. That's a whole nother thing I'm not going to go down right now because we're trying to stick to Damien Darklord here. So that's kind of like most of Damien Darklord's original story with Dragon. He does later come back twice in the comics. Once is when Savage Dragon... Do you know the origin of Savage Dragon yet?
Yes, we went over that a while ago.
No, I didn't tell you.
That was episode 3.
No, I didn't tell you the origin. Like his actual... The origin that you don't know in the
beginning. His origin, is it in volume 1?
Well, his origin that you know...
Goddamn retcons.
His origin, it's not a retcon, it's just a reveal of the origin. He just woke up in a burning field.
This is like Lost. It takes for freaking ever, doesn't it?
Savage Dragon woke up in a burning field, and that is his original origin. But he has a real origin of how he got there. I'm not going to give it away because I actually plan to do an episode about that. So I'm going to leave that to the side. But anyway, there is another storyline where a teenage version of Damien Darklord comes back and actually sends Savage Dragon back in time to fix something and actually saves him by doing that. Because he sees like Dragon as a bigger part of some story or something.
Listen, Mark, I'm not pro-abortion personally, but
Damien is a candidate.
But if they're going back in time and doing shit, maybe they should give Liberty the choice.
You know what? That's part of the storyline, believe it or not.
Oh my
because
God, no.
Part of the storyline is that Liberty is a conservative and is against abortion, and that's why she didn't have the abortion. It was a part of the storyline where people were like, hey, maybe you should abort this Martian rape baby, and she's like, no, I don't believe in that shit.
So what if he grows up to destroy the multiverse?
Well, they didn't know that at the time. Yeah, you're right. Maybe they should go back in time. Yeah, not all these characters have ready access to time travel. Like Damien Darklord does, but that's about it. Like no one else is a time traveler.
They can't do an Avengers Endgame time heist?
I mean, they probably could. Maybe he'll get there eventually. There's a lot. There's actually a couple instances of time travel in Savage Dragon. We'll be talking about more.
I have so many things I want to say, but I'm going to stop while I'm ahead.
Well, I'm pretty much done. There's one more time that Dark Lord appears. I don't know if he'll be back or not, but to me, this is why he's like the Savage Dragon's ultimate villain, because he ties in so much to such different aspects of the Savage Dragon mythos and universe. But he was also the villain that inevitably led to, spoiler alert, Savage Dragon's death, which I could go into that whole thing too. I didn't spoil that really for you, right? You look very surprised.
No, yeah, I know, because the current dragon is Malcolm, his son.
Yes, exactly.
Malcolm Dragon.
So basically at one point in the comics, Savage Dragon loses his powers and he's just like a regular dude with a fin for a while. But there's this thing where other people can inject Savage Dragon's blood and it usually kills them. Like they get Savage Dragon's powers and it kills them. And then so Savage Dragon's like in this final battle with Dark Lord, he's like, fuck this. I got to take Dark Lord on. I'm going to inject my own blood, my own old blood from when I had powers into my body. He powers up and this epic battle does eventually kill Dark Lord. Again, a different version of Dark Lord, because this is a multiversal thing. This actually ties into Crisis. There's a storyline called the Merging of Multiple Earths on Savage Dragon, and this was the culmination of it. It's actually really funny and really well done. But yeah, in that battle, he re-Savage Dragons up for the last time, basically kills Dark Lord, and then he fucking explodes because it happened to him too, from his own blood. And that's how Savage Dragon dies. Anyway, that's why I love Damian Dark Lord, because he just ties into like literally like 15 years of Savage Dragon history. And he's just like a really enjoyable character, and he can be used for many different things. Like at one point, it's like you almost cheer for him when he shows up in this one storyline where he ends up sending Savage Dragon back in time to fix all this shit. And to me, as a lifelong Savage Dragon fan, to me, he is like the ultimate Savage Dragon villain, because he's just tied into so much of what's happened to Savage Dragon. Like he sent him to an alternate reality where his entire rest of the series has taken place since then. So, and he also ties into Malcolm Dragon, because they were both babies at the same time. So they kind of have a parallel story. Very complicated, very absurd, but just very awesome too. So my number two, basically just because he is so tied in.
I'm sorry. I just have to reiterate. Yes. He's just
clarifying questions.
He's your number two.
He's my number two.
Oh my God.
Are you afraid of my number one?
Yes.
It's not going up in the complicated scale. Don't worry.
Okay. Because this sounds like a number one pick.
I honestly did weigh it back and forth, but well, we'll get there. I'll explain why my number one is my number one when we get there. Maybe this should be my number one. It's arguable. Like I said, I struggled with this a lot. I struggled to whittle it down to three. That's why I made it four. That's why I'm doing an honorable mention. But honestly, I could do a list of 30. Like we could do 10 episodes breaking down our top 50 villains, and I would never get bored.
Yeah. So. Killer Strike being one of them.
Killer Strike being number 49. Yes.
Oh man. My number one seems weak compared to that, but my number one is another Robert Kirkman creation. I'm talking about Robot from Invincible.
Oh, nice. That's not weak at all, dude. I love Robot.
Yeah, Robot.
Robot.
Like he genuinely starts heroic at the beginning of Invincible, but just like all my other guys, you know, he takes this very direct turn towards villainy. So when he does it, there's no going back. From his cloning of Rexplosion to his, you know, plots to kill most of Earth's heroes, you know, the ones that Omni-Man didn't kill, to his strange twisted love affair with a Beast Girl, Robot is like a mix of, you know, I want to say Ultron, Vision, a little bit of Ultimate Reed Richards, if you're all familiar with the Maker character from Marvel Comics. You know, Robot is one of those guys where you're afraid of him because you know he's capable of almost anything and he always has a plan. So when Invincible eventually does defeat him and Beast Girl later on in the series, you're almost at this point where you're just like, I can't really tell if he's dead or not. And while, of course, there were some moments earlier on where they think they kill Robot and they don't really kill Robot, you just get to the point where Robot is almost more of an Ultron than Ultron is. And, you know, it's just that maniacal hatred of humanity and willingness to literally kill your friends and family in order to get what you want. Ultron is, I'm sorry, I can almost say Ultron. Like, Robot is Ultron if Ultron knew what humanity, what was really to be human, but absolutely hated every part of it. It wasn't just part of his programming, it was part of his identity. So, Robot from Invincible is my number one comic villain.
Excellent, excellent choice. And I also like that Robot is, like, actually just, like, this weird, tiny, like, thing that can't move in a jar in reality.
Yeah, little like, at least know, one Quasimodo version of those.
Well, at least before he goes into what's his name, that one guy's body, the bomb guy.
You know what he looks like? He looks like the little, like, chest baby thing from Total Recall.
Yes, that is exactly come what here. Robot
let
actually
me touch
looks
your
like.
Face with my little old baby hands.
Now, I think Robot's a great choice, and he might have been my number five if I did a top five. I think he's just a fantastic villain, and I think the best villains are ones you really get to know and you get to understand. So even if they're doing evil, dastardly shit, they become like I think that's what the thing for me is, like, villains that are completely tied into the main characters, whether it's into their origin or their story, to the point that they're kind of inseparable. And, like, a lot of people might say that, you know, like Joker and Batman are inseparable, especially if you buy the part of, you know, that in some versions where it's kind of implied Joker might have had something to do with Batman's death, depending on what you're reading.
Or Batman's parents' death.
Batman's parents' death. But I mean, to me, like, Two-Face is tied into him from the very beginning. Well, I guess if Joker was involved in Batman's parents' death, that would have been the very beginning, but I don't think he really was supposed to be in any kind of comics canon.
When it comes to, you know, like, the Red Hood origin version, which is now, I guess, the canon version, like, that is somewhat tragic because the Joker really didn't want to become a criminal. But, like, with Harvey Dent, I mean, him turning into Two-Face and everything, like, that is Shakespearean tragedy.
So that brings me to my number one, who I think is, you know, he's as Ying to the hero's yang as you can possibly be. My number one villain is Magneto. And to me, this is one villain that, even more so than a Doctor Doom or a Robot, I think that you really can sympathize with a lot. I mean, he grew up in Nazi Germany. His parents were murdered by Nazis. He discovered his mutant power, like, basically lashing out at Nazis that were hunting him. So all good stuff from here. Was a friend of Professor X. I think that the analogy, he's like the Malcolm X to Professor X's Martin Luther King. There you go. And I just think that all and this is consistent with Magneto. Now, when he first comes into the comics, he debuts in I think it was X-Men number one, right?
Yep.
X-Men number one, created by Jack Lee and Stan Kirby. Stan Kirby and Jack Lee. Well, I just did it again.
The multiverse of artists, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, correct. And yeah, I mean, he has been just inexorably linked to the X-Men from the beginning. You can't have an X-Men storyline without somehow bringing Magneto in. And I do like that he has, even more so than Victor Von Doom, who he might team with the Fantastic Four once in a while. He's never really, really part of them, though. Like, they always know it's like a temporary thing. Like Magneto has actually had his moments of full heroism where he really joined the X-Men. He was a leader of the X-Men at one point. He was a leader of the New Mutants at one point. This poor motherfucker, they turned him into a goddamn baby, Remzo. They turned him into a baby. How am I not supposed to have sympathy with for him?
He's got some grievances.
He has legitimate grievances. He has legitimate grievances, not just against humanity overall for, you know, the things that have happened to mutants and what he's seen growing up, you know, in Auschwitz, essentially. He knows the cruelty that humanity is capable of, and he's seeing it happen again now with mutants, and that's his motivation the whole time. Now, we're not going to go into Hickman X-Men stuff where him and Professor X are just on the same page and whatever. We're not going to go to that.
#fascism.
Hashtag fascism. But, you know, to me, Magneto is the ultimate villain because even at his most dastardly, he even still kind of has a heart. Like, even when he's doing dastardly stuff, he will still kind of, like, spare people. Like, he won't go as far. I mean, he has killed innocents, don't get me wrong, but he will often kind of, like, back off on Professor X sometimes. You know, even, you know, and then, you know, I think he's had his mind wiped multiple times by Professor X. I mean, he has had bad shit happen to him. And to me, he's always acting. I'm not saying he always does the right thing, but he's always acting with, he's never just acting out of pure malice. He's always acting because he believes that his actions are going to lead to something better for the people.
Magneto never does anything without a reason to do it.
Correct. Yes. He responds to things that happen to him. Like, I mean, even in that Fatal Attraction storyline we looked at, you know, like they come after him. Like he's just chilling in his freaking, he's just chilling up in his satellite and like they go after him. So, I mean, and now, you know, you could say he had a loose affiliation with the Acolytes who were going and killing people in hospitals, yada, 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 whatever. But the point is, no matter what, you can always see the humanity in him. You can see the person that wants to be the good person. And to me, unlike your version of a villain who the best villain is just the most evil and dastardly, to me the best villain is the one that just it almost could have been the hero. You know, he's maybe just one little event away from actually being the hero, because at his core he has good motivations, even if he ends up doing sort of dastardly things to get to certain ends. But to me, Magneto has stood the test of time. He's always an effective character when I'm reading X-Men from the 70s or the 80s or the 90s or today. I am still seeing Magneto, maybe not today because we're in the Hickman verse now, but almost till today, to me, Magneto is consistently, you know, he cannot be separated from the X-Men, from the storyline, from Professor X. It's a yin and yang. And to me, that's what makes the best villains. So he's my number one. Although, honestly, with how much I broke down Dark Lord's origin, you could really make the case that maybe I should have made him number one. But to me, Magneto has always been the best villain.
Well, the only question is, are you team Ian or team Michael in terms of the actors to play Magneto on screen? Ian McClellan or Michael Fassbender?
I think they're both great. I think they both do an amazing job. I'm slightly partial to the Ian McClellan version just because, you know, I'm slightly more partial to those movies overall. But in a bubble, I don't know. In a bubble, it might be really close. I like Ian McClellan just because he seems like more the older Magneto, which is kind of how I see Magneto. Shit, he's in World War II. He's got to be pretty old. But I mean, Fassbender's awesome. Like, he does maybe the second. It's like a 1 and 1A for me, honestly. But I think if I was forced to choose, I'd choose McClellan.
I hear you.
What about you?
I mean, I look at the first class era of X-Men films, and I see them as Magneto's stories. Like, almost like the first couple X-Men films are almost always exclusively about Wolverine. You know, they really put Magneto front and center. Yeah, I mean, for him, for First Class, a film that people really did not expect to be good, I mean, that it made him almost like James Bond level cool. That was how awesome they made him. And even though the X-Men films after Days of Future Past definitely waned, I mean, certainly no one's asking for another, you know, Apocalypse or Dark Phoenix. I mean, it was never, I'll even say this for all the actors in that. It was never any of the actors' fault. It was always Fox's fault. So, you know, I'm probably Team Fassbender.
Fair enough. I can't argue with either one. What about the portrayal of Robot in the Invincible cartoon? How do you think that compares to his portrayal in the comics?
I think they're able to compress a lot of the story elements without losing the depth of what's going on, because they certainly move up the pace for Robot's descent into villainy, but it doesn't make it any less horrifying when he really does. And we haven't even really seen him go full villain yet. We're only seeing the subplot of Robot becoming the person he will eventually be. So I think Invincible Season 2, I think they're really going to move up on the Robot versus Everyone era of Invincible. And it's going to be, if Season 1 was as bloody as it was, could you imagine what it'll be when Robot goes full psycho?
Absolutely cannot wait for it. I think Invincible is, I don't know if I want to go as far as the best adaption of all time to the animation, because I did see, I think I mentioned this last episode, I did watch Batman Year One. That adaptation.
Oh, you liked it?
Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
It's almost better because it's kind of panel for panel, but expanded. So you see, instead of just one punched fight with Catwoman, you see this whole long drawn out scene with Bruce fighting Catwoman for that first time. And
then with Bryan Cranston playing Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
You can't look at Jim Gordon without thinking of Bryan Cranston now.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah. No, I think it was fantastic. And just in terms of overall adaptations, I mean, I think X-Men the Animated Series is more of a nostalgia pick. Like when I go back and watch it now, it's good, but kind of cheesy, but Batman the Animated Series holds up. And so that would be like my 1 and 1A, and Invincible probably needs to, stand the test of time a little more to be able to hold a candle to the Animated Series, but it's right up there. And I think the portrayal of Robot was just, they did it in a way where they kind of sped up the storyline. Like you see more about Robot and you kind of like know he's kind of a villain even by the end of this first season of Invincible, whereas it took a long time in the comic, this is an animated series. We're probably not going to get 80 episodes, so I see why they had to speed that up a little bit, but for some reason it didn't feel rushed to me. It actually felt natural for the pace of the show, so I'm super excited for season two. But yeah, I think they did an absolutely fantastic job of that. And speaking of animated series, I just found out that this is a thing. I mean, I knew it was a thing, but I didn't know I could watch it. There was actually a Savage Dragon animated series. I think it was just maybe a season or two.
It was on MTV. I think it was our friend Kyle in the Second Brick Comics fan zone that brought it up.
Mm-hmm. It's on Peacock to be watched.
Have you watched it?
I have not. I watched it a little of it when I was a kid, but I really barely remember it. So I'm kind of curious. I doubt it's great, but I am curious to go back to it. Maybe I'll do a little Patreon bonus where I go through some of those episodes.
I wonder if it's going to be like Todd McFarlane's Spawn, where you see Eric Larson at the beginning of each episode of Savage Dragon.
Oh, really? Is that right?
I don't know, because if you watch the Spawn HBO series, Todd McFarlane introduced every episode. That's kind of cool, but if you have no clue who he is or don't care about Spawn, you're like, who the fuck is this guy?
Nice, nice. Well, Remzo, I think that about does it for our little villain breakdown here. And one thing I want to mention, the last Wednesday of the month is typically our SBC Potpourri episode, where we kind of look at TV, movies, comics, films, whatever we're watching and reading this month, because we're doing this Kirby Club episode. That's a special way to give a little extra thanks to our patrons. We're actually going to have the SBC as a Patreon-only show that'll probably be coming out sometime in the next week or so. So look for that one on the Patreon feed. And if you love our Potpourri episodes, if you love where we talk about what books we're reading, what books we're watching, for as little as $5 a month, you can join us this month on that one, too. Again, patreon.com/secondprintpod. Remzo, anything else to it's weird to wrap up a show without having to grade something on a number scale, but here we are.
Well, numbers, we don't count good, as Forrest Gump would say. As always, folks, remember, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. If you loved us, share amongst your friends. Never forget, the only thing you need to know, read comics and change the world.
Good
night, America.
Adios.